Yeah, everything I'm going to talk about is going to be in the ontological models framework, which I'm hoping you've kind of already heard a bit about. But the basic idea is just that. The sort of thing you might see in an experiment is you prepare a system according to some kind of preparation procedure P, you measure it according to some kind of measurement procedure M, and you get some outcome K. Okay, so you can figure out these probabilities. And the idea is that you notice that the distribution over the measurement outcomes depends on how you've prepared the system. Okay? And so the kind of most obvious explanation for that is that, well, there's a system going between the preparation and the measurement. Maybe that system has some kind of properties. When you prepare the system, that affects the properties in some way, and then those properties go on to affect the results of the measurement. And so, I'm going to use the letter lambda for those properties. This is also called the ontic state. Yeah, so the idea is when you prepare the system, you end up with some ontic state, and the distribution over those ontic states depends on how you've prepared the system. Then when you measure the system, the result is going to depend on the ontic state. And the kind of non-trivial thing here is that the result of the measurement isn't allowed to depend on the preparation except via this ontic state. Okay, so all the information about the preparation that affects the measurement has to go via this ontic state lambda. But you don't actually see the ontic state, so we just integrate over that to get the thing you do see. Okay. And more specifically, what I'm going to be talking about is two different types of ontological model. And these are called psiontic and psi-epistemic. And the definition is that you consider two different preparations that in quantum theory are going to be represented by non-orthogonal pure states. So I'll just call those psi and phi. Okay. So just by in this framework, any preparation procedure corresponds to some kind of probability distribution. And in a psiontic model, the distribution for this state and this state have the property that they don't overlap. So maybe the one corresponding to psi looks something like this. And the one corresponding to phi, something like this. Okay? And the definition of a psiontic model is that for any pair of distinct quantum states, the associated distributions don't overlap. And the reason that we call this psiontic is that since the distributions for any two distinct states don't overlap, it means if I pick a particular ontic state, so if I pick this ontic state, it's only going to be compatible with one quantum state, okay? Because if there were two different quantum states that gave this non-zero probability, then that would violate the definition that the probabilities aren't allowed to overlap. And so because knowing the ontic state means you know the quantum state, and just by sort of definition, the ontic state is real, that means that the quantum state is real as well. So ontic is just kind of a fancy way of saying real. So the other option, psi-epistemic, is just going to be the sort of opposite thing to that. So now my distribution for psi and my distribution for phi are going to overlap, okay? In fact, all the definition says is that for some pair of distinct quantum states, the probability distributions overlap in this way, okay? Doesn't matter how small that overlap is, could in principle just be for one pair of quantum states. Okay, and the reason we call this psi epistemic is that now if I take some lambda here, well then I could have got that from preparing psi, but I also could have got it from preparing phi. Okay, so as far as the system is concerned, there's no fact of the matter about whether the state is psi or the state is phi. Those are just two different sort of information, two different bits of information or knowledge that you could have about the system. Okay, so one person might know that the ontic state is somewhere in here. Another person might know that it's somewhere in here. And that's perfectly consistent with them both talking about the same system. And so under this sort of heading, the quantum state is not real, it's just a state of knowledge. Okay, so most of the kind of existing worked out interpretations of quantum theory that fit within this framework, like Bohmian mechanics, those sorts of things, they fall into this category, okay? Because the ontic state consists of the quantum state plus some extra stuff, okay? Given that most things seem to fall in this category, why would you even be interested in this category? And the answer is basically that there's a lot of quantum features that would be much less mysterious in a model like this. So the simplest example is probably that if you're given a system that was prepared in one of two non-orthogonal states like these guys, there's no measurement that you can do that will tell you with certainty which one was prepared, okay? Which on this view is kind of mysterious because the system does know which one was prepared and you're just somehow being prevented from accessing that information. But on this view, it's totally natural because whichever state was prepared, there's some chance that you'll get an ontic state in this region. And when you have an ontic state in that region, there's just the information about which state was prepared just isn't present, okay? And so it's no mystery that you're unable to determine which state was prepared. Another very compelling reason is that we know that if you have a bipartite system, your choice of measurement on one half of the system can affect what quantum state describes the other half of the system. Okay, this is called steering. And on this view, where whenever you have a different quantum state, that has to correspond to a different ontic physical state of the system, that means that what you're doing on one side has to be affecting the ontic state on the other side. But under this view, it could be that this was the ontic state all along, and your choice of measurement was just affecting whether you ended up in this state of knowledge or whether you ended up in this state of knowledge, okay? So nothing actually happened to the ontic state, which is supposed to be the kind of real physical thing. And there are like other examples you can think about, no cloning, this kind of thing. Okay, so like once you've been convinced that this is kind of an interesting possibility, the first thing to figure out is, well, is such a model even possible? Okay, maybe the sort of statistics of quantum theory just don't allow you to have this kind of model. So the simplest example would be if it was possible to distinguish non-orthogonal states with certainty, then such a model would clearly be impossible. We know you can't do that, but maybe there's some more subtle thing that prevents you from making a model like this. And let me just get the reference. For finite dimensional quantum theory, we know that such a model does actually always exist. So you can find it in this paper. Okay, so that gives an example of how to construct a model like this. But it's sort of a very contrived example. You just sort of fix the dimension of your Hilbert space and then you do this weird construction that kind of sets up these probability distributions in a slightly mysterious way, and then you check that it does give you the right statistics. But it's extremely unclear how this could be kind of extended to like a real proposal for interpreting quantum mechanics. It's you know, it's more just like a sort of mathematical proof that this kind of thing is possible, but it's sort of very artificial and unclear where you would go from there. And so you could take the opposite perspective and say, well, maybe, you know, these models just aren't a good fit with quantum mechanics. Maybe there's some sort of extra assumption we can make, sort of requiring some kind of reasonable property of these models that's just going to tell us it's flat out incompatible with quantum mechanics. And that's... Is it gone?
Just use these.
Thanks. Cool. Okay, so the one example of that is exactly what I found with my PhD supervisors. The extra assumption we made was about how product states are represented in the ontological model. So if... if I have a product state like this in quantum theory, that tells me something about how I can prepare it. It means that I can just use two totally independent setups. Okay, and all I need to do is prepare psi 1 on the first system, and then as a completely separate process, I just need to prepare psi 2 on the second system, and I'll get this state on the combined system. And it also tells you something about measurement results. It tells you that if I do local measurements on each system, so I just choose some measurement to do on the first system and some other measurement to do on the second system, then the results of those measurements will be uncorrelated. Okay? And so the kind of natural way that both of those features could be explained in the ontological model is that when I'm doing my procedure to prepare psi 1, I just get some ontic state for that first system. When I'm doing my procedure to prepare psi 2, I just get some ontic state for that system. So this explains why we can kind of prepare them in these completely separate devices. And then the natural explanation for why the measurement results on these two systems are uncorrelated is that the thing that decides the measurement results, the ontic state, is also uncorrelated. So the probability distribution the joint probability distribution over these two ontic states is just going to be the product of the probability distributions for each individual system. Okay, so it turns out that this assumption plus the predictions of quantum mechanics is incompatible with psi epistemic models. Let me give you the proof of that. And I'm just going to do it by sort of starting with the simplest case and then explaining how to do more complicated cases as we go along. The simplest case is that the two non-orthogonal states I'm going to consider, they're going to be on a qubit. One of them is just going to be a computational basis state. And the other one is going to be plus. which is a uniform superposition of computational basis states. Okay, and the assumption is going to be that these two quantum states are represented by the kind of overlapping distributions over there. Okay, so remember, the definition of a psi epistemic model is that for some pair of quantum states, the distributions overlap. But to begin with, I'm just going to assume that for these particular quantum states, the distributions overlap. All right. So the way the argument goes is that we're going to straight away use this assumption. So let me just sort of draw the same picture again. But now I'm going to consider that the first guy is choosing whether to prepare the first system either in the state 0 or in the state plus. Okay. And then someone else is making the same decision about how to prepare the second system. All right. Now, by assumption, this 0 and this plus are represented by overlapping probability distributions. And what that means is that, in particular, there's some value of lambda 1 that can occur when 0 is prepared, but that can also occur when plus is prepared. So let's say that happens with some probability p. Yeah?
This decision of preparing 0 plus, is that some random process so we get a mixed state? Or do you like agree on that before? Just considering different cases?
Doesn't really matter. Like, I think it's probably easier just to think of it as considering one case at a time. But yeah, because it's going to be important that somebody knows which one was prepared in order to kind of check the predictions that I use later on. Okay, so with probability p, this ontic state, could it, you know, I choose which one of these to press, and with probability p, I get an ontic state for which it could have come from either choice. And the same is true down here. And now, by this assumption, with probability p squared, that's going to happen at the same time in both places. Okay? So with probability p squared, this ontic state is compatible with 0 and plus, and this ontic on the first system, and this ontic state is compatible with both 0 and plus on the second system. So kind of a slightly different way to see that is is just to sort of draw the probability distributions corresponding to these different possibilities. So by assumption, if I just look at the first system, I know that 0 and plus overlap. And that's going to be the same for the second system. And we know that to get the distribution for the combined system, we just multiply those two things. Okay, so if I multiply this and this, I'm going to get something on this region. If I multiply this and this, I'm going to get something on this region. And similarly, multiply this and this, something over here. And this is going to give me something down here. Just use a whole other color. Okay, and that possibility I talked about before is just that the combined ontic state is in this region here. Okay? And because this region here has non-zero probability and this region here has non-zero probability, this thing here that just comes from multiplying the two is also going to have non-zero probability. Okay, so these are the ontic states I'm going to be worried about. the ones that could have come from zero and could have come from plus on both systems. And why am I worried about the osmotic states? It's because of the following measurement that I can now do on the combined system. So these are two qubits, and this is going to be a four outcome projective measurement. And the outcomes are going to be like this. Okay, so the first thing to check is that this is actually a measurement. Okay, so it needs to be an orthonormal basis. It's not too hard to see that all of these are normalized. It's a little bit harder to see that they're orthogonal. So you just kind of need to consider the four choose two different pairs of them and make sure that the overlaps are always zero. Maybe if we just try the first two, so now terrified of pressing these buttons. Okay, so if I take the first two, then the product of those first two terms is just going to be, so the overlap of 0 and 0 is just going to be 1, so the only interesting thing is the 1 and the minus. Now, if I consider the first cross term, 1 and 0 are orthogonal, so that's 0. Same goes for the other cross term. And the last one, the overlap of 1 and 1 is 1. So I just need to consider the overlap of 0 and plus. But this is minus 1 on root 2, and this is 1 on root 2, so I get 0. And it's just the same sort of calculation for all the possible pairs. Okay, so this is a valid measurement. But what's interesting about it? Well, the interesting thing is to look at what happens when I think about those four different states that I could have prepared the two systems in. So remember, I could have prepared the first system either in state 0 or in state plus. Same for the second system. And so the combined state of the two systems is one of these four guys. And this first option is orthogonal to the first outcome of the measurement. Okay. It's orthogonal to the first term because the first term has that 1, and it's orthogonal to the second term because the second term has a 1 it. Okay, so if I prepare in this state, I'm never going to get the first outcome. If I prepare in this state, then I'm never going to get the second outcome. If I prepare in the third state, that is Yep, orthogonal to the third outcome. And if I prepare at this fourth state, that's orthogonal to the fourth outcome. So what this measurement always allows us to do is whichever outcome we get, it rules out one of these four possibilities, tells us we couldn't have prepared it that way because otherwise there would have been probability zero of getting the outcome that we saw. And so we can rule out that that was the way the system was prepared. Remember what I argued with this picture, or with the argument about going from p to p squared, was that just starting with the assumption that 0 and plus overlap, and then using this requirement about how product states are represented, I found that there are some ontic states that have some probability of occurring from all four of these possible quantum states. And you can just kind of immediately see that that's a contradiction, right? Because when I get those ontic states, the measurement has to give some outcome, okay? Has to choose between these four options. And each of the options for which outcome to give is incompatible with one of the possibilities for how the system was prepared, okay? So just kind of this basic equation right at the top there that tells you that, you know, on the left, if something has probability zero of occurring according to quantum mechanics, then either the ontic state has to have probability zero or the measurement outcome has to have probability zero. But I've argued that all four of these preparations give non-zero probability to these special ontic states, and at least one of these outcomes has to have non-zero probability just for the probability of all the outcomes to add up to one. So we've just got no way of reproducing these probabilities. All right, so that's the argument that shows that you can't have zero and plus overlapping under this assumption. So I'm now going to generalize that slightly to any pair of qubit states whose overlap is at least as big as, sorry, at least as small as zero and plus are. So on the block sphere, zero is here, and plus is here. And I'm now going to, I always get this the wrong way around. I'm now going to consider a pair of states that have less overlap. Okay, so they might be this state and this state, say, which almost look orthogonal in this picture. All right, and the argument's going to be pretty simple. I'm just going to reduce this case to the zero plus case that we've already solved. And the way to do that is just to cook up a channel that maps this pair of states to this pair of states. So what we want is some channel that sends psi to zero and phi to plus, okay? Because if these guys have overlapping probability distributions before we apply the channel, they're still going to overlap after we apply the channel. And we already have an argument that shows that these two guys can't be represented by overlapping distributions. Okay, so to check that a channel like this exists, hopefully you know that any channel can just be represented by a unitary on a larger system plus tracing out the ancilla. So let me just check that such a unitary on a larger system exists. So this is just going to be my extra system. And I want it to go to zero. And then there's going to be some kind of junk on the extra system. Okay, so, whoops. So that this channel is going to be constructed by just taking your system, adding an ancilla prepared in state zero, applying a unitree that does this transformation, and then tracing out the ancilla so that you're just left with the state you wanted. And in order for a unitree that does this to exist, the defining property of unitrees is that they preserve inner products. So I just need to check that the inner product between this guy and this guy can be equal to the inner product between this guy and this guy. So the inner product on this side is just psi phi, okay, because the inner product of these guys is 1. The inner product of these guys is 1 on root 2. And then I haven't said what these guys are, so this could just be anything. And now, remember, I said that the case I'm considering is that the overlap of these guys is smaller than the overlap of 0 and plus. Okay, so this number is smaller than this number in absolute value. And that means that this number here is going to be something between 0 and 1. And so it's going to be a valid overlap between two states. Okay. So I can just choose J1 to be 0 and J2 to be whatever I need in order to get the right overlap. Okay, and it's still going to be a valid state. Whereas if I'd have tried to do this argument when these two guys were closer together than 0 and plus, then this number would be larger than this number, which would mean that this would have to be an absolute value greater than 1, which you can't get from two valid quantum states. Okay, the overlap is always between 0 and 1.
Is there any reason why your ancilla has to be initially in zero state?
No, it just has to be in some state that's the same in both cases. Okay, because we don't want this channel to require that you know whether the state is psi or phi. You have to be able to implement this channel without knowing. So I want this to be just some channel that, without knowing anything about the system, I can achieve this transformation. Okay, and so my procedure for how to implement the channel can't be different depending on whether the state is psi or phi. It has to be just some procedure that works either way. And so it's important that my state for the ancilla system is going to be the same in both cases, because I really want it to be the same channel that achieves these two transformations. If I was using two different channels to achieve the two different transformations, then there's no reason to think that the overlap after the transformation has to be the same as the overlap before. Okay. So hopefully I've more or less convinced you that we can also get this to work when we have these states that are more further apart than psi or phi. And so the next kind of obvious thing to consider is, well, what happens when they're closer together than 0 and phi? And that turns out to be a bit trickier. So basically, you can't run this argument just using two systems when you have states that are closer together than 0 or plus. And so you have to consider more systems. So we're still going to use this kind of product assumption, but now we're going to extend that to more than two systems. And the argument I'm going to use is not the one from our paper. It's a simplified argument that you can find in this paper. So we're going to start off with our state psi and phi. And you know, these two states might be very close to being the same state, okay? So they might be kind of like this on the Bloch sphere. And the sort of basic idea is that we're going to prize those two states apart by taking tensor products of them. In particular, if I consider this state and this state, then I don't know if I should, yeah, maybe. Let me just call that psi primed and phi primed. Then the overlap of psi phi, psi primed and phi primed, let me just talk about the absolute value, is going to be taken to the power n, okay? Because for each of these terms, I just get the overlap between psi and phi, so I just get the product of n of those. And so even if I started with states psi and phi with very large overlap, as I crank up this n, the overlap of psi primed and phi primed is going to get smaller and smaller, okay? As long as the number I started with was less than one. And eventually, this is going to be less than 1 on root 2, which is the case we already know how to deal with. All right, so that's pretty much the argument, but there's kind of one thing you need to check, which is, you know, we're trying to deal with the case that this state and this state have overlapping probability distributions. And now I've ended up talking about these two states. So we need to check that if these two states are represented by overlapping probability distributions, then these two states are also represented by overlapping probability distributions. And the way to do that is just to make another use of this product assumption. Can kind of talk about it in the, you know, it's really the same argument I gave before when I drew that picture there. If you have two things that are represented by overlapping distributions, and then you take the product of those distributions, then those products are going to overlap as well. Okay? It's kind of even simpler here because you're just taking the product of the same state again and again. So if I have some lambda for which this is non-zero and this is also non-zero, then by the product assumption, these guys are just represented by the products of these distributions, and so they're also going to have some overlap. Okay, that overlap is going to have reduced, but because this argument worked for any amount of overlap, that doesn't matter. Okay, so the final step is just that this whole time I've been talking about qubit states. So what if you're interested in some other states? But that's very simple, because the definition only ever talks about pairs of states. Okay, so you know, the definition of psi epistemic is that there exists some pair of states somewhere in your Hilbert space that are represented by overlapping probability distributions. But because there's only two states, they're going to live in a two-dimensional subspace of that Hilbert space, okay? Just one spanned by those two states. So you can just use that to define your qubit and then run the whole argument just in that qubit subspace. Okay, so just to kind of summarize all of those reductions, the definition of psi epistemic is that there exists a pair of states, psi and phi, that are represented by overlapping probability distributions. Our first step is to identify the qubit where those two states live. Our next step is to take as many tensor products of those states as we need to ensure that the new states have an inner product less than or equal to 1 on root 2. We then take those two states and put them through this channel so that they're now either 0 or plus. And then we subject those states to this measurement, which we argued showed that 0 and plus can't actually have any overlap.
I have a question about the argument for higher dimensional systems. How can we be sure that, like, if the lambdas overlap in some higher dimensional Hilbert space, then we project down the way to the qubit state, that we still have an overlap in the lambda describing the qubit state?
I'm not actually kind of doing anything on the ontological model side. So for the ontological model, I'm still, whatever distributions you had originally, I'm still talking about those exact same distributions on the exact same ontic states. The only thing I'm doing is just something on the quantum description. I'm just forgetting about all the rest of the Hilbert space, except for a Hilbert space that's spanned by those two states. And that's just to allow me to, for example, construct this measurement, you know, only talking about state 0 and state 1. So if you like, you can imagine that this measurement now has some fifth outcome, which is the projector onto the rest of the Hilbert space. But because of the way we've set up the Hilbert space, that outcome just never happens on the states we're considering. But we're not doing anything at all to the ontological model. We're just taking those same distributions that we knew overlapped. Because this, you know, none of this argument depends on any kind of specific features about how the ontological model, you know, what the space of lambdas is or anything like that. So we don't need to change that.
The proof is pretty powerful with the correct assumption, but could you have more generalized assumption for the...
Yeah?
Can you work on the same thing with more generalized assumption for your product state?
So one thing we know is that you can't generalize it completely, okay? So you can't just have no other assumption other than that the model is psi epistemic, because, as I said near the start, there are psi epistemic models. So I guess the sort of question is, what's the weakest assumption you can make that actually allows you to say something? People have looked at kind of slightly weakening this assumption. So there's somebody called Shane Mansfield at Oxford that's thought about this quite a lot. And there's other papers that have looked at weakening this assumption in various ways. And to me, the question is not sort of, can we have a mathematically weaker assumption that still gets us the result? Because you kind of obviously can. You know, you're never going to use kind of everything that the assumption tells you in order to get the result. But the question is more, is there a weaker assumption that there's still a kind of physically plausible argument for? So like one example of something people have looked at is, okay, instead of requiring that the distribution really has this product form, I'm just going to require that whenever the distribution on the first state is non-zero, and whenever the distribution on the second system is non-zero, that the distribution on the product is non-zero. But I'm not actually going to require that it's the product of those two probabilities. So that's certainly enough to get the argument to work, but it's not clear what physical grounds you could have for believing that assumption, unless it was that you believed this assumption, right? Like, you know, either you judge the two systems to be independent, in which case you're going to assign them the product distribution, or you judge that they're correlated, in which case there's no particular reason even why which probabilities are zero and non-zero should have that behavior.
We write this, like for all of the ontic model framework, we write this integral with the d lambda. Uh-huh. But we have actually no idea in what space lambda lives in. So we just assume we can integrate it somehow and that things are well behaved. Is there a way to argue that this should also always be possible or that this is no problem?
I mean, I guess you're not assuming any more than you need. Yeah, I mean, if you do things properly, you're not really assuming anything more than you need just in order for the ontological model to kind of make sense, right? The whole point of the ontological model is that it's supposed to reproduce the quantum predictions. And so if this integral is just not well-defined in some way, then it's the predictions of the model aren't well-defined and it's kind of useless in that sense, okay? So, you know, you are losing some generality about what these ontic states can be, but it seems like you just have to lose that if you're going to get any predictions out of this ontological model that you can compare to quantum theory. Actually, there's a tendency to kind of put a lot more assumptions than you really need. So if you kind of want to see everything done as carefully as possible, then there's this very good review article that sort of tries to only kind of impose the minimum possible mathematical structure on the ontic states. It's a 7. And just to kind of follow up on this thing about this assumption, another option rather than weakening it is that you can just replace it with something else entirely. And that's what some people have looked at. So Lucien has a theorem that uses a completely different assumption. There's also one by Kolbeck and Renner. And this review sort of compares those quite nicely. And there's another tack you can take, which is to say, okay, we know if you don't make an additional assumption, you can't rule out this definition of psi epistemic. But this definition of psi epistemic is actually incredibly weak, okay? It just says there exists some pair of quantum states somewhere in the Hilbert space that have some kind of overlapping probability distribution. But that could just be one pair of quantum states and they might have a tiny overlap. But if you take these kind of reasons I gave at the start for why psi epistemic models are supposed to be something you should be interested in, really it's only going to be interesting if you have something much stronger than that. So for example, every pair of non-orthogonal pure states is impossible to distinguish with certainty. And so if we're going to explain that feature, we don't just need that one pair of non-orthogonal pure states have overlapping probability distributions. We need that every pair of non-orthogonal pure states has overlapping probability distributions. And likewise, with the steering argument, any pair of non-orthogonal states you can steer between. So for this to help, you need that every pair of non-orthogonal states overlaps. And you can even go further than that and say, well, you know, the amount that the quantum states overlap should be represented in the amount that the probability distributions overlap. Because the more the quantum states overlap, the harder they are to distinguish. And so we should expect that that's explained by the probability distributions being more and more overlapping. And so another line of research that's very interesting is don't make any additional assumption about product states or anything like that. Just strengthen the definition of psi-epistemic a little bit, and then see what you can say. And it turns out you can say quite a lot. Sort of the latest results really show that the overlap between quantum states will in some cases correspond to only a very tiny overlap between the probability distributions. And so the overlap between the probability distributions is kind of not big enough to really do the kind of explanations that you were hoping for. So although you can have these psi-epistemic models, on the one hand, they have to kind of violate these natural assumptions. And on the other hand, they're not really psi-epistemic enough to kind of do the job you were hoping for. So there's now this kind of two-pronged attack that says that, that these psi-epistemic models really aren't going to give you anything very nice in this framework.
Thanks,
Matt.